hope that's your desire tonight also, is to be like Jesus. So let's look into his word a little bit and see some things that we can learn from it. Judges chapter number 15. Judges chapter number 15. Going to continue on in their Bible study of the book of Judges and looking a little bit closer at this man, Samson. Remember, Samson is a life who should not, we should study but not duplicate. Some of the lessons that we are learning from him is some of the reasons why he struggled. And one of the main reasons why he struggled was because he never embraced God's will for his life. So the title of tonight's lesson is, Samson Learns an Important Lesson. Samson Learns an Important Lesson. We see that Samson, in the past few weeks, we've seen Samson's greatest enemy is himself. He struggles with dealing with his pride and his lustful ways. And it comes to the spot where instead of Samson conquering himself, his self is conquering him. And we're going to see, remember last week we talked about that retaliation and about that lack of forgiveness and the idea that one person retaliated, the other person had to retaliate, they had to get even over and over and over, and how that really helped no one. And that's where we're at tonight. They're continuing in this retaliation. And we see some very important things here, and I think there's some good things we can take out of tonight's lesson and message. And let's just hop right into it. Judges chapter 15, I'm going to start in verse number 9. The Bible says, "Then the Philistines went up and pitched in Judah and spread themselves in Lehi." Now, what this is saying is that, and Lehi is a place that's a little bit farther away from Jerusalem, is that, you know, they're upset. And why are they upset? Well, it said that they came to take out Samson, and Samson went ahead and just killed him and just slaughtered the people that came. It was a complete slaughter. He killed everyone that came to get him. And so now they're upset. So the Philistines, who are in control of the Israel area, they're under captivity, they're under oppression. The Philistines decide that they're going to come and they're going to lay out they're going to start war. And you're going to see here the Israelites don't understand. They're saying, why in the world are you coming to fight us? Why in the world are you beginning this battle? And they say, it's because of Samson. So we see the retaliation and we see the hard-heartedness here. They kept on trying to get back and forth. And you see it escalates here in hostilities between Samson and the Philistines. We also see the response here of the Israelites. Let's see what happens in verse number 10. "And the men of Judah said, why are ye come up against us?" And who are they talking to? They're talking to the Philistines that are pitched in Judah. That idea of pitched in Judah and spread themselves, meaning that they're getting ready to attack. "The men of Judah said, why are they come up against us? And they answered, to bind Samson are we come up to do to him as he have done to us." And where's the motivation again? It's to get even. He says, we're just going to do the exact same thing he did to us. It says in verse number 10, "And the men of Judah said," I'm sorry, verse number 11, "then 3,000 men of Judah went to the top of the rock of Edom." This is where Samson's at. "And said to Samson, knowest thou not that the Philistines are rulers over us?" So we see here that they, not just one guy comes up, 3,000 guys. These are probably an army here that's coming up to Samson, asking him, why are you doing this? We are servants to the Philistines. And the problem here is that they shouldn't want to be servants of the Philistines. They should actually want to be free, but they said that the Philistines are rulers over us. Samson is the only one that we see are fighting and trying to deliver them, but Samson's motives are wrong, as we've looked at before. These men don't get behind Samson and say, Samson, you know what? We've seen what you've done. We heard what you've done. Let's get together and let's go fight these Philistines. That's not what they say at all. They begin to blame him. They're fine with living in their subjection and fine living in under the rule of the Philistines. And it says, what is this that thou hast done unto us? And they said, why are you doing this to us? And he said unto them, as they did unto me, so have I done unto them. You ever seen a kid that was upset, mad? And you go to him and say, why did you do that? It's because that's what they did to me. And don't think they've done anything wrong. If that's what they did to me, I'm going to do it to them. And if I get a chance, I'll do it again. And that's what's going to happen here. It says in verse number 12, "And they said unto him, we are come down to bind thee, that we may deliver thee into the hand of the Philistines. And Samson said unto him, swear unto me that ye will not fall upon me yourselves." So they come up, not to try to help him. They said, we want to deliver you. We want to give you over to the Philistines. What they're saying is, we know you're going to die, but we want to be, you know, we don't want any problems. We don't want any fighting. We just want to give you over to them. Verse number 13, and he asks, he says, look, make me a promise. You're not going to kill me yourselves. Verse number 13, and they spake unto him, saying, no, but we will bind thee fast. He's like, no, we're not going to kill you, but we're going to deliver you. We're going to bind you fast and deliver thee into their hand. We're going to give you over to them. Samson doesn't care. But surely we will not kill thee. And they bound him with two new cords and brought him up from the rock. And when he came unto Lehi, the Philistines shouted against him. They think the battle's won. They're excited. And the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the cords that were upon his arms became as flax that was burnt with fire, and his bands loosed from off his hands. So we see here that the Philistines see him coming. They see that he's wrapped up, and that they shout because they know they got victory over Samson. And it says like the cords, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in his strength. And when he gets flexed his muscles, the things just came apart. I thought about showing you guys that tonight, but I didn't want to, you know, make you guys too jealous or anything, you know, but you just flex a little bit and the bands just fell off. It's like, even if you read these words and study these, it's like it was liquefied. It kind of went away. And it says in verse number 15, and he found the new jawbone of an ass and put forth his hand and took it. Look at this. And slew 1,000 men therewith. 1,000 guys with a jawbone, donkey of a jawbone. Wow. That's what God can do. Imagine if the 3,000 guys went along with him. They were willing to fight with him, willing to be the Spirit of God on them. They could have been delivered, but that's not what happened. In verse number 16, you see Samson's pride comes up a little bit. And Samson said, with the jawbone of an ass, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of ass have I slain 1,000 men. So he makes his own little poem up. He makes up his own, he's bragging, he says, have I slain, and there's heaps, and you can imagine this little area, 1,000 men's corpses just laying there, there would be heaps of corpses there. Sounds kind of gross and disgusting, I get all that, but yeah, that's what happened. Where's the 3,000 guys at? I think the 3,000 guys have retreated. They did not want to fight the Philistines. They probably didn't think Samson could do it, but they're probably watching from afar. But it says in verse 18, and he was sore athirst, and called on the Lord and said, thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant, and now shall I die for thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised. We see something a little bit different here. He's really, really thirsty. There's nothing he can do to fix that. There's no water around. The 3,000 guys aren't there to give him water. He can take on the 1,000 Philistines because the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. But God reminds him of something really important. You need me. Yeah, you can do this, but you're right. You're getting ready to die because you don't have one of your most basic needs. We're going to talk about that in a little while, is that even though Samson was big and mighty and strong, he needed God. And God's reminding him here. Verse number 19, but the Lord clave a hollow place that was in the jaw, and there came water thereon. And when he had drunk, the Spirit came again, and he revived. Wherefore he called the name thereof of Enechohor, which is in Lehi unto this day. And then it says he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. 20 years. So let's take these verses, and we're going to look at some important lessons that Samson learned. First thing is that I want you to see here, and we won't spend much time on the first two, but I want us to focus on the third one, and I think that's the important lesson that I'd like for us to focus on tonight is Samson cannot trust his countrymen. Samson cannot trust his countrymen. His countrymen here, they go and they're cooperating with the Philistines. The Philistines are the enemy. The Philistines worship false gods. They know that they should not be in bondage to the Philistines. They know that they should be free. They know it's because of their sin, but they're so hard-hearted, they do not want to get it right, and they just don't want to cause any problems. They says, look, the Philistines are there. Let's go ahead and compromise. Let's give them what they want. And you see, let's just go get Samson. Let's bring him down. Let him go to Samson. Let there not be any type of issues. Let there not be any type of problems. And you say, Pastor, what are you getting at? You don't know who you can trust. Many times when a good person goes out to do something right, sometimes people just don't back them up. Many times when a person goes out to take a stand and do what's right, others will kind of throw them under the bus. There's a couple things I want you to think about here. You know, why would they do this about Samson? Number one, maybe they didn't know much about him. I don't think that's really true, but that's one thought. Israel's a big place. Philistines are a big place. He did just kill a lot of Philistines, and he did just kill the 30 Philistines earlier, but he's trying to deliver Israel. He has the wrong motives, and they do not want to get behind Samson because of the fact Samson has the wrong motives. They see his immaturity. They see where he's falling down and where he has been selfish and wanted to marry the Philistine woman. And he goes out and just kills 30 men on a whim. And then he just has a big slaughter when they try to retaliate. He's not much of a leader. He's not bought into what God wants him to do. And you see now he needs help. He needs friendship. And what happens? His countrymen say, okay, Samson, we're going to take you down and we're going to go and we're going to, have you just given over to the Philistines? We know they're going to kill you, but Samson, it's your own fault. I want to encourage you to understand that this cowardice by these Jewish soldiers, they're condemning him. Not only did they denounce Samson, but they planned to deliver him to the Philistines. The man who helped relieve them of their oppression that they were treated cruelly before. He is God's chosen person to be able to deliver them, but the good person is condemned and the evil person is exonerated and exalted. And they're saying, we want to worship. We want to be under the rule of the Philistines. I want you to be careful about supporting good people and helping people that are in need. I also want you to be careful about not giving in to those that are wicked. I know a big debate that's going on today, and I know not everybody watches football in the room, but I know some of you do. And should those guys be protesting, and should the guys and this and what President Trump said and all these different things? And I got a lot of different opinions on it. You know, I don't think anybody should protest during national anthem. I don't think anybody should be kneeling and all those different things, especially when they're there for a certain reason and a purpose. But I also think, you know, how President Trump and the way he said things and was vulgar, they were both wrong on both sides. And no longer is it really about what's right and wrong. No longer is it about the flag. They're using their own platforms to try to generate their own publicity for their own wrong reasons in some ways. It's very, very careful. And I think about this and I look at that. You say, what does that have to do with anything? You think about it. We want to support those that are doing right. But sometimes it's hard because they do stupid things. And that's what's happening with these Jewish soldiers. They're like, we're just going to give you up. You've done these things wrong. Samson should have done what was right from the beginning. Samson, probably God would have used him to deliver the nation already. They probably would have done all these great and wonderful things, but he didn't want God's will. He says, I'm choosing to do what I want to do. And what do you see from his nation? He says, go ahead. You're going to do what you want, and we're going to deliver you up. So you got to be careful about who you trust in life. And Samson's learning this, that he can't count on his countrymen. It doesn't seem like Samson cares either. Samson was kind of a lone guy and lone wolf in a sense, and he wanted to do what he wanted to do all the times and do things his way, didn't want to answer to anybody. He says, just make sure you don't kill me, because he didn't want to fight with the Israelites. His fight was with the Philistines. Just make sure you don't kill me. Second thing I want you to see here is Samson needs God's help. Samson needs God's help. If you look at this, it says that the Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him, and the cords was upon his arms. And you think about it, Samson's not worried. Samson's not upset. Samson, I believe, knows that God's going to enable him again to do this, just as he's done before. But he's taking it for granted. In a few chapters, you're going to see that Delilah cuts off his hair and he wakes up and he realizes that the Spirit of the Lord is not with him. He goes out and he wants to fight the enemy because he thinks he's going to deliver, and he loses that battle because he thought God was going to be with him. We got to remember this, that God is the one that fought this battle, and God is the one that we need his help with. We try to do this on our own. We try to do it on our strength. And we even put it under the name of God. And we even say, this is what I'm going to do because this is what God wants me to do. And this is what God had created Samson to be, a deliverer. And he knew that God was going to help him here. And it says that he takes the jawbone of an ass and he kills 1,000 men. I mean, just a great battle. We see the power of God. That is an awesome, awesome story. Sometimes we forget about how great it is and how wonderful it is what God can really do with a life. God chooses to use something unique. God chooses to use his jawbone. God chooses to do something that's different than probably nobody's ever seen before. I want to encourage you tonight, remember, we need God's help. We can't trust others. Many times we can't trust others. Be careful who you trust. But trust in the Lord. And that's what Samson does. He trusts in God. But I see that in verse number 16, he talks and he has this little poem. But at the end of verse number 16, it says these words, "Have I slain 1,000 men?" Third thing I want you to see is not only that Samson can't trust his country, Samson can't needs God, but the third thing he realizes, Samson learns, he needs God even for the little things. You think about it, there was 1,000 men there he killed that were trying to attack him, but he can't conquer his own thirst. There is 1,000 men that God enables him and allows him to have a great army and have this great victory, but he can't even conquer his own thirst. Samson believes he has just come through a great battle, he won a great victory, only to die as a result of not having enough water. For all his great strength, Samson was unable to help himself in this critical moment. Look what he says here. And some people think he's being exaggerating, but he says he was sore athirst in verse 18 and called on the Lord. How often do we see him calling on God? You don't see him saying that as he's walking down the hill. He doesn't say, "God, I need you." As he's going to kill the 30 Philistines, he doesn't say, "God, I need you." It's the last lesson we learned when he's retaliating. There's a great slaughter. He's not calling out to God, "God, I need you." We see Samson here in one of the few moments that he says, "God, I need you." And you say, why in the world would God allow this? God brought this Samson to the point to just teach him a very important lesson. God allowed him to come to a place of total inability that he might learn the truth that he is not self-sufficient. Many times God will take us to a certain spot or allow us to take ourselves to a certain spot that teaches that we are not self-sufficient. Many times people will tell you, make sure that you're self-sufficient. Make sure that you do this and that you do that. But we are God-dependent people. We've been created to be God-dependent people. He may have been able to kill 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey, but he still needed God to meet his most basic needs. Samson was taught that valuable truth. Without him, we can do nothing. Without him, I can do nothing. This is a lesson that we need to learn and learn many times. Self-sufficiency. Without him, we are as helpless babes. Without him, we are dependent upon the own air that we breathe, the water that we drink, the food that we eat, and for everything else we enjoy and have in this life, it comes from God. As we talked about Sunday night on the model prayer, it says, "Lord, give us this day our daily bread." You're like, "I don't need daily bread. I have it." Samson didn't. Samson probably had water at home. But he saw himself in a spot, in a moment of time, where he understood, I know I need God. And God's trying to teach him that he needs us throughout this whole entire time. Think about the difference in verses. At the end of verse number 16, it says, "I slain 1,000 men." But look at his prayer in verse number 18. Look at the changing that happens. It says, "And he was sore athirst and called on the Lord and said, Thou hast given this great deliverance into the hand of thy servant. Now shall I die for thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised." Look what the difference is. Verse number 16, he says, "I've done it. I've slain it. I accomplished this. Look at me. Look what I've done." In verse number 18, when he's sitting there, he's thirsty. He has no hope. He's probably dehydrated. He probably knows that if the Philistines came at that moment, at that time, he would be helpless. But in verse number 18, what's he saying? "You delivered them." There's a big difference there between what verse 16 says and what verse 18. Verse 16 has the eye trouble. "I did this. I did that." Verse 18 says, "God, I know you did it." Verse 14 says, "The Spirit of the Lord came mightily upon him." Samson has been brought to the end of his own abilities, and he humbles himself before God. He acknowledges his utter dependence upon him. Samson knows that it's unless God intervenes, he will die. This is no longer a matter of personal glory. It is a matter of survival, and he must throw himself at God's feet. You know what? This is the way we should approach God. I mean, so many times we come to him, we've been talking about this through our prayers and talk about through this on Sunday nights in our prayers. Oh, I got this. I can handle this. I can do this. I can do that. And we just go to God with just a little bit and say, God, I got this all figured out here. I just want you to put your stamp on it. I just want you to put your name there. I just want you to say it. Okay, God, I want you to bless it. This is what I want. God, you work all this out and you, that's not the way it works. It's not. Our prayer lives must come to the spot where we are the end of ourselves and the end of our own abilities. And we come to the spot and we say, God, I know I need you for the most basic things in life. Thank you for how well you provided for me. God, I know I can't be the husband or the wife, the father, the mother that you need me to be. God, I'm dependent upon you and you alone. But not most of us pray that way. He acknowledges God's power. He says, Lord, thou hast given me the deliverance into the hand of thy servant. He acknowledges God's person. He calls himself God's servant. It's amazing when a person thinks they're getting ready to die, how they look at things. He said, God, you did this deliverance. I didn't do this. And God, you delivered them into the hand of thy servant. He hasn't been God's servant at all yet, has he? He's only cared about his flesh and lusting after women and gambling. And he hasn't cared about anything of God. And he says, I'm your servant. But what would have made a difference in his life at the beginning of his life, when he was supposed to begin to deliver the nation of Israel out of, if we would just stop and say, God, I am your servant. God, this is one of the best moments of Samson's life. He said, yeah, he killed 1,000 guys. No, he finally got over himself and said, God, I need you. He acknowledges God's preeminence. Sounds like Samson is worried that he might die here when he talks about being in the hand of the uncircumcised Philistines. He knows that the Philistines would take his body and use his death as a way to dishonor God. So Samson is praying that God will spare him so that God may not be dishonored. And at this single moment, Samson's focus is finally not on himself or what he wants, but it is now on God. God let him have this great victory and then brought him to the most humbling spot. I need drink. You see God's response. Now, this is kind of interesting. I don't know how much you guys have heard in this story and you think about this story and you might disagree with me, but if you go and study this out, verse number 19, I don't know, when you were a kid in Sunday school and junior church, I was taught more than once that the water came out of the jawbone of the donkey. But if you read it, it doesn't say that specifically. Look what it says here in verse number 19. It says, verse number 19, but God clave a hollow place that was in the jaw. People think that that must have been referring to the jawbone. And I always thought that was strange because the donkey is an unclean animal. Samson was supposed to be a Nazirite. He wouldn't have been supposed to touch that in the first place or touching the dead. But why would God allow the water to come out of that? Well, if you go and you study the word jaw and the word lahai, it's translated the same word. This could mean that God caused a spring to flow up from the ground near Samson was. It doesn't use the word jawbone, but this word jaw and the word lahai is similar, and when you translate it, it can be translated different ways. Thus, it means that God calls the spring to flow up from the ground near Samson was. Of course, God is God. If God wanted to let the water come out of the jawbone, then God can do that. He doesn't have to answer to us. But I always thought it was strange how God would, I know Samson made the choice by picking up the jawbone of the donkey. But this is God that's providing the miracle. Why would he use that? So you see here, but God clave a hollow place that was in the jaw, and there came water thereout. And when he had drunk, his spirit came again, and he revived. Wherefore, he called the name thereof Echinacor. Now that's, he's giving a name of the place. He wouldn't be calling the donkey jawbone a name of something, but he said he called the name thereof the place, which is in Lahai unto this day. So you can believe what you want, and I know it makes it kind of cool, the story you think about the water coming out of the jawbone, but if you go and translate that word and you study that word out, you can see it could actually came from a something that God allowed to flow up. Can God do that? Yes, of course he can. He gets allowed him killed 1,000 guys with a jawbone. So what do we learn from this? God heard his prayer. God answered his prayer. When Samson's heart got right where God wanted it to be, God was willing to do something for him. When we get our hearts to the spot where we recognize who he is, like when Samson said, I'm your servant. When we recognize all the good things we have comes from God. Lord, you did this deliverance. God, I need you. This is for your glory. This is for your honor. That's when God's going to answer our prayers. It's a reminder that God hears and answers our prayers. He even invites us to pray. He promises to answer our prayers. He tells us to cast our cares upon him. And then you see a revival into Samson's spirit. It says his spirit came again in him. And in verse number 20, you see there's a change here. Before this point in time, you don't see Samson as a judge. You don't see Samson taking a responsibility as a leadership role. We see him being childish. We see him being immature. We see him about caring for his own lust. And so, but here in verse number 20, and he judged Israel the days of the Philistines 20 years. So we see here that he is going to judge for 20 years. So in my mind, what the Bible is saying here, this is the problems he had before he began to judge. And next week, we're going to look at the problems he has after he judges, because once again, his flesh gets the best of him. But here we see that he is willing to do what God's called him to do. He's willing to be obedient. God called him to be and created him and gave him to his parents so he could be a judge. He finally is willing to do what God's called him to do. He finally added that up. He judged Israel. And it was a time of order, 20-year period. Doesn't mean it was a time of peace. That's what it usually meant with the judges. And we're going to see here next week that he goes down to another wrong spot where he shouldn't have been. He looks on another woman that he shouldn't have been there. And God's going to allow him to once again have a great physical feat that he's going to allow him to do as he is helping him deliver the nation of Philistines from the Israelites. So as we close up, what can we learn? I read the story here and I see the Israelites. I'm like, why in the world would they give him up? I mean, that's his countrymen. He's the only guy that's been fighting in this battle. It's because they didn't want any problems. Why in the world sometimes do we not want to do it? Because we don't want any problems. Well, we want everything to be status quo. We want everything to be good. We want everything to remain the way that is. It's not worth getting on our knees and praying. It's not worth fasting. It's not worth the fight. Let's just let things go and let things be the way it is and just leave things alone. That's what they wanted. They're in bondage. They suffer because of the fact that the Philistines rule over them, but they didn't want to fight. Does that really talk about our Christian life sometimes? I don't want to offend anybody. And no, we shouldn't offend people on purpose. But if we're not willing to give someone a gospel tract because we're worried about what they might say, there's a problem. We don't even try. We don't even know if they'll be offended or not. You know, if we're worried about going up and trying to talk to somebody and trying to do what's right and trying to live for God, and you know, that's how we get churches that don't do a lot for God because we're not fighting. Second thing I want you to see is that I know point two and three seem a little bit same, but point number two is Samson needs God's help. You see that the Spirit of the Lord came upon him. He had this great victory. Third thing is Samson learns he needs God's help. That first battle, he didn't realize that I did this. I've slain this. You can look at your lives and look at the house I built. Look at the family I raised. Look at all these things. And then God can bring you to the spot in your life when you say, you can't even get water for yourself. You can't even get your most basic need without me. Don't let your pride get into your way. Remember who I am. And that's what Samson does. I am thy servant. Remember, he's the one that gives us good things. Thou hast delivered them in my hands. Remember, he's the one that we're living for. I don't want these uncircumcised Philistines to come and take my body and abuse it and bring dishonor to you. That's when he prayed. That was, unless you want to look at when he dies at the end, this is probably Samson's finest moment. He finally connects the dots. It's not all about me. God's the one that brought me here. God's the one that delivered these people. God is the one I should serve. God's honor is what is at stake. Samson learns an important lesson, a lesson that I think we could all need to be reminded of. None of us like to get to the spot where we need our most basic needs provided for us. We need air to breathe. You know, that everybody has that. Talk to the guy on the oxygen mask when you take his mask off for a little while. You know, need food, we need food. Talk to the guy who can't process the food or doesn't have the food around. You know, God can bring us to that spot to show us that we're dependent upon him. But we get glory when we pray like this aforetime, when we recognize him now that we need him. And we cry out to him and say, Lord, I need you. You are my God. I am your servant. All the things I've accomplished in my life is because of you, and it's for your honor and for your glory. I'm going to wake up tomorrow, and I'm going to serve you. I'm going to wake up the next day, and I'm going to serve you. And I'm going to wake up the next day, and I'm going to serve you. Let's go ahead and stand to our feet.